Hey everyone, Adam D. from Indefensive Ska here. A little note before we start the show. Los Angeles is dealing with multiple catastrophic fires. A lot of people have lost their homes and are in need. If you're able to help, please do so. There are a lot of great organizations you can donate to, like California Fire Foundation, Pasadena Humane Society, Mutual Aid LA, and there's even a list of people in the music industry that have lost their homes. Links are in the show notes for our Rob Harvilla episode. Thanks.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I need a mic stand.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already. That way you'll get three new interviews sent to you every single week, just like this one. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with... Don't forget to leave a rating and give a review while you're at it, if you feel so inspired. We've had some great guests come by lately, including actress Kate Siegel. She was just here talking about, oh my God, she's got so many projects in the works. VHS Beyond Dark Corners, of course, The Life of Chuck with her husband Mike Flanagan. We had Finn Wittrock and Kelsey Asbel from the movie Don't Move on Netflix, John Cleese from Monty Python, Black Francis from The Pixies, the cast of Shrinking, Tony Hale, you know him from Veep and Arrested Development. He was here to talk about Woman of the Hour on Netflix, Depeche Mode, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains, Les Claypool of Primus, Maynard James Keenan of Tool, both here for the 1,000th episode, Big Sean, Lindsey Buckingham of Fleetwood Mac, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, catching up with Sting. This is, I think the third time maybe that he's here. In fact, I'm gonna put all three interviews, the newest one and two of the older ones, in this episode. And a little bit because we only got to talk for a few minutes. We caught up backstage at Bourbon and Beyond 2024 in Louisville, Kentucky. Had a nice, very casual talk at a picnic table. You can see the video online as well. If you want to see a very casual talk, it looks like we could, if we had tea, we would have been drinking tea. I'll say that. We also, before the camera started rolling, got to catch up about the Basquiat painting that was behind him in the second interview that we did that you'll hear in just a moment. Because when you're Sting, you can have a Basquiat painting just casually hanging around in your Zoom room. But we were mostly sitting down to talk about his 3.0 tour. This is him matching up with two guys who aren't the police. And that's the important part to start with. He reflects on the unique experience of performing as a three-piece band, something he hadn't done since his police days, and why he loves the clarity and space it brings to his sound, even surprising himself. We'll talk about his single, I Wrote Your Name Upon My Heart, which incorporates the iconic Bo Diddley beat, and he'll tease the possibility of more new music on the way. Plus, he shares insights into how he approaches his back catalog, always searching for fresh elements to keep his songs alive, and even hints at that collaboration with Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg, all that and more. So let's jump into it, talking about the 3.0 tour. It's Kyle Meredith with Sting.
Nice to be back to Bourbon and Beyond. I think I've been to Louisville in a while.
I don't think you've been here. We've noticed.
It's beautiful.
We've just been waiting, sitting around, just circling the block.
You haven't, they say.
I think we were talking last time you were supposed to be here, just a huge flood came in. So this time
right.
You get...
There was a big storm.
You get just this mind-numbing heat that's been hanging around today. So congratulations. It's one or the other back in the South.
It's good to have you here, though. Looking here, you're doing this three-piece tour again, the 3.0 tour that you've been on for, I guess, most of this year.
Started in America two nights ago in Detroit, and no one asked for their money back yet, so I'm kind of confident that it's going well. We've been touring in Europe, and again, I think people are surprised to see three people up there, because, you know, I have many different configurations of bands over the years, but I haven't gone back to a three-piece since the famous one. And for me, surprise is everything. I want to surprise myself. I want to surprise the people coming to see us or listen to us. Surprise is the essence of music.
I like that maybe there's a little bit of trolling that goes in there as well, like a three-piece? Yeah, it's a different one. Yeah. Just lean into that a little bit.
Yeah, why not? 3.0.
But, like, is there freedom in a trio? Because you're without working with the big band like you would, like, you don't have as many options, right?
You have different options. You know, I think what we love about it, the three of us love the clarity of the sound between the instruments, all the air between the instruments, which creates a lot of freedom. It's not all clogged up with, you know, not a sound, but it's loud and it's clear, and I think the audience responds to that. We have to work harder. There's no safety net. All of us, each of the trio, has to work harder, but we enjoy it.
You know? That's got
to
be fun, though.
It's fantastic.
Like, there could be a disaster. I guess it could be a disaster anytime. Although you're quite the professional at this point, so maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I can either own up to a disaster or I can, you know, act my way out of it. But
So you're replacing Neil at this one and Ohana and maybe some other ones, too. I had to ask, I was like, do you know Neil? Do you get to call him and be like, hey, I'm doing your stuff?
No, I don't know him that well. I've met him a few times and have a great love and respect for his music, so yeah.
If you wanted to, you know, just slip in Cinnamon Girl out there or something, just to be a good moment.
Castle's Burning was my favorite of his. I used to sing that years ago.
Oh, there's plenty to choose from.
Yeah,
with him. You do have a new single. I Wrote Your Name on My Heart, and I mean, once again, you've got this great rock song. You're doing the Bo Diddley beat. Now, does it come from that? Because, and the only reason I bring it up, because obviously it is, but it's in the press release too. Like, it makes note of it. So when you're writing that song, is like, because I don't know if you've ever used that riff before or that beat before.
Probably not. Again, it's a surprise, you know.
Yeah.
Surprise myself. I think it really telegraphs what the band is about. It's a very simple song. It's a love song. It's a romantic song, but it's noisy and very direct. So, yeah, I think that's what we are.
I quote our last interview to artists every now and then, because I ask you once if songs like that were easy for you to write. And you said, yeah, basically. Not to say the song is simple, but it's just that you have figured out so many different styles, and when you're like, oh, I need to do the rock song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that still the case?
Well, this song is more complex than it sounds, actually.
Okay.
There are more chords than you would imagine, but it sounds simple. Uh-huh. And I think that is the trick, really. I want things to sound simple, even if they're not. But you know, songwriting is never easy. It's always hard.
Yeah. How often do you think of your songs as fluid? Because again, the different iterations, the bands, and like, Dylan's a good example, right? Like, Dylan can write a song and know that there's going to be 10 different versions of that song. Mm. Like, how much do you think of your songs when you're doing that?
You know, I try and recreate a song every night. I'm always looking for some incremental change that I can make, and my musicians are the same. We're looking for tiny little harmonic changes or a bass line or a harmony somewhere that makes it different from the night before. And in that ethos, it's the same as a jazz musician. You know, we'll play a standard, but they're looking to do something different. And that keeps the song alive. It keeps me committed. Songs aren't museum artifacts. They're living, breathing organisms. And you have to breathe life into them every night. That's my job.
Can you push them too far?
Of course you can.
Like, I guess, to a certain extent, you don't want to change the melody too much where people can't sing along if it's one of the big hits or something. I don't know.
Or change the melody a lot, but, I mean, it's based in the key center that I'm starting out. And I think the audience, you know, are attuned to that kind of sophistication, if you like. You know, they're not there to hear a record reproduced. I hope not.
I don't like it.
No, me neither.
I know there are bands that do that, and sometimes I just don't get it. But there are people also that there. I think there are some people that want that. It's just not me.
You know, when you record a song, you hardly know it. It's like a first date. You know, after you've been playing it for a while, you get more adept at playing it, and you find new things. So this is not a first date.
I noticed you've been going deep on the set list, which is I think all the big fans have noticed. I was looking around and looking at some of the requests, and one popped out to me because someone asking for History Will Teach Us Nothing. And I thought, oh, that's a really good moment right there. Like, how often do you look at your deep back catalog and go, oh, that's a song that definitely speaks to a new moment? Or how much thought even goes into it when you're choosing those, I guess?
I called Dominic the archivist because Dominic remembers songs that I've long forgotten. He remembers the chords and how they go. So he will reteach me my own songs, and soundtracks are interesting. I said, what do you got today? And he'll bring something up, and I sort of vaguely remember it and try and figure it out. But soundtracks are where we explore older songs. I don't think I've done History Will Teach Us Nothing.
I don't think you have either.
Because I don't actually believe it. History teaches us a lot. It's just a polemic statement I made to invite conversation.
Yeah, I understand. I think most people would understand. Yeah. I know I got to wrap it up. Dr. Dre?
Yes.
You on the new record?
I know him.
Yeah, because he said you're on the record. I don't know
if
he was supposed to.
Well, if he said I'm on the record, that must be the truth.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I think that's... I want to know. I want to know what this sounds like.
Sounds pretty good, actually.
All right.
If it's true.
If it's true.
Yeah.
You think it sounds really good if it's true. I'll take that. You can't blame me. You just blame him. It is such a pleasure to get to talk to you. I love the new song.
Thank
I'm
you,
hoping
Kyle.
This is leading to a new album. I think it usually is. So, well, right. See you soon.
Thank
sir.
You.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Saving money on remodeling your home at Menards. Start your tile project off right with DentShield Tile Backer from Georgia Pacific. It's proven to protect against moisture in your walls and subfloors, with a built-in water barrier, making it perfect to use in damp areas like kitchens and bathrooms. Plus, its easy-to-cut design makes installation a breeze. Save big on Georgia Pacific DentShield Tile Backer panels. On sale through March 2nd. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back. Now we're going to head back to 2021. It was the second time I got to talk with Sting, and we got to talk about his record, The Bridge, having his cameo in Only Murders in the Building, and a lot more. So this is part two of Kyle Meredith with Sting.
Good morning. How are you?
Congratulations on what is another fantastic record. I've had so much fun listening to this one.
Thank you.
This was, I guess, like almost all the records coming out this year, probably a pandemic record for you. No travel. And I know a lot of that for a lot of artists, that's where the inspiration comes from. Where did you go to find the characters that make up these songs? Because it's so detailed.
Yeah, I'm not sure where I went to. I mean, geographically where I went to. I was in San Francisco doing my play, The Last Ship, and then the mayor shut the city down. So I got myself and my crew back to England, and I sat at home for a day, and then I said I have to work. So luckily I have a studio in my house, so 10 o'clock the next morning I clocked into work, and I worked through till dinner. And you know, recording a record is a bit like fishing. Some days you throw a line in the river and you get nothing. Next day, nothing. Next day, nothing. One day, maybe a Thursday, you'll get something that looks like a fish. And once you have something that looks like a fish, kind of cut it open and then cook it. But it's as simple as that, really. It's just something to pass the time. And then at the end of a year of that, you find yourself with a bunch of songs that actually fit together somehow by a magical process that I don't quite understand. That they have a kind of theme. And the theme that I could see was that they were all about characters who were in transition from one world to another, from one state to another, between love affairs, between life and death, between sickness and health. And that's what connected all of them. And so that's why I called the album The Bridge. I wrote a song called The Bridge. They're songs about a bridge to the future that is safer and happier. And all of us are looking for it, including me.
The way you write about characters too, and I say characters because the songs are just populated, and they always have such specific professions. I think that's what's fun, you know, and you've always done that, whether, you know, it's never just a cowboy. It's a cowboy who's, you know, something else, you know, or something like this. What draws you to writing about those types of characters in that way?
You know, they just come to me. You know, I've written about gamblers who are also philosophers. I like, you know, nobody is just one thing. I mean, real characters, real people are more than just, you know, you're more than a DJ, I'm sure. I'm more than a songwriter. You know, I putter around in the garden. So I like those. I like the reality of people rather than just writing a two-dimensional character. And so they're real to me. They're very real to me.
Do you find that, and I'm sure it's not one way or the other all the time, but do you find that the character makes the song, or does the song introduce a character in how you're writing?
You know, I tend to write backwards. I will find a refrain, something that perhaps on its own will not mean very much, but it has a certain shape and a melodic shape, and it catches in the mind, and then I'll try and make sense of where would that refrain have come from? Why would somebody be saying that? What situation could they be in that would make that a coherent statement? So I work backwards. That's my secret.
And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just the way I'm hearing it. But as you said, with the theme of a lot of these characters, a lot of these folks in here being on their bridge, being in that transitional moment. I mean, no one ever seems to start in the best situation. Like when I hear Harmony Road, I'm like, man, this person is like, is it going to end well for them?
I mean, they're the most interesting characters, you know, and songwriting and listening to a song offers the process of resolution. You know, I've often said that songwriting is therapy. You start off in a situation that's difficult and complex and you can't see the way out until the bridge comes along, the middle eighth, the bridge. And there you seek a resolution to the issue, a different viewpoint, a different way of looking at it. You go, perhaps there is a way across to the other side. So again, it's therapy for me, and I hope it's therapy for people listening. We're all in these situations on a daily basis, you know, problems, social problems, personal problems. Songs can help.
Absolutely. I think that's, well, one of the many reasons why I lean into them like I do, but I know that's one of the many reasons why we all do. And then I guess speaking about these specifically too, you had mentioned what you were doing in San Francisco and the water songs really come on towards the end. I mean, Captain Bateman, I think, makes two appearances. Of all the characters, what's the captain's importance here?
You know, Captain Bateman is an old folklore. Formerly Lord Bateman. It's a song about the idea of the song is probably as old as the 11th century. He's a soldier who goes away and fights in a foreign war, gets captured, is imprisoned for life, and then the jailer's daughter falls in love with him, and to get out, he promises marriage. And so this is a song about breach of promise. And he leaves her. In my version of the song, he's punished. Well, I intimate that he's punished, but in the old ballads, he doesn't get punished. He gets away with it.
See, there we go. He had a happy ending originally until he made himself into a Sting song and then no more. Do you want to lie down on the couch and talk about this a little bit more? That's
Well, I've got behind me is my state of mind at the moment.
Perfectly said. Rushing Water ends up being the first radio single, and what a great song. And I hope you don't mind me saying, I had that feeling of a classic sound to it, like one of your classic sounds.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. you know, you've dabbled in so many different types of genre, you know, styles of song. For a song like this, which I don't know, I'm just going to call it pop rock, whatever. I mean, is that just a switch that you can flip on? Like, oh, I'm going to write the radio song or something like that, because it just sounds easy.
It is easy. And, you know, the song kind of wrote itself. It really did. It's a guitar song. And, you know, you sit and jam with a band and stuff comes up. But the water symbolism for me is important. You know, for me, water traditionally symbolizes the unconscious. It symbolizes the feminine, both areas which fascinate me. And so really it's a song about immersing yourself in something that you don't quite understand, a medium that is uncomfortable at first, but then, you know, will lead to some sort of revelation. So water for me is definitely that medium.
Well, again, just the way that song kind of, I don't know, just feels good. There are feel good moments all over the record. I wrote down, you know, loving you.
Feels good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What better reason would you need?
Well, loving you, you know, I give you the same compliment on that one. I mean, it's, you do that nice trick where it's got this electronic component, but it's not cold. It's very warm. The background singers give it so much warmth. The mixing with whatever that meow is and the fiddle. I mean, I don't know if you could just talk about the sound of what you ended up with on a song like that. Like, how do you arrive there?
You know, the sound of the album generally is really a vocal sound. I turned the vocal way up, more than most contemporary records. Because I wanted my voice to be right inside your head, the listener's head. It's a very personal record because of that. I'm not sort of sat inside a band. I'm way out front. And that was a very deliberate policy. I can't quite explain why, but that's what I did.
I guess it makes a little bit of sense, just again, knowing that it was, you know, mostly for the most part, just you in a studio. I mean, just you and your voice.
It's true. I mean, you know, it's not such a novelty for musicians to record remotely. We've had the technology for many, many years. The challenge is to make that remoteness an intimate experience, you know, so the drummer might be in Los Angeles, I'm in Paris, the guitar player's in Italy. How do you make that a comfortable sound? Mm-hmm. That takes a rapport with the other musicians, a sense that they know what I want and I know how to get that from them. I think we did it successfully, even though it's not a natural way to make music. But in the modern age, it's not so unusual.
Well, the compliment there too, it does feel like you are all, like I can't hear that everyone. And sometimes you can. I mean, sometimes you hear the disconnection at least.
You know? Well, it's a state of mind. You know, music is a state of mind.
I hope you don't mind the broad question here. Where did the idea for Hills on the Border come from?
You know, I come from the north, the very north of England on the Scottish border. And the hills there are a kind of natural boundary between England and Scotland. And it's been a war zone for 1,000 years. Many battles were fought up there. There's many, many ghost stories. So I wanted to write a ghost story about my home area.
Well, again, the feeling of that one, it's a, there's a mood. I mean, it's a definite mood. The maybe it's the deluxe edition, but it ends with a couple of covers. If I had to choose of my 10 favorite songs of all time, an impossible task, but I'm pretty sure you did two of them, talking about Sitting on the Dock of the Bay and Nilsson's I Guess the Lord Must Be in New York City.
Yeah.
You've been doing these daily videos or weekly videos on your Twitter, and you talked a little bit about Dock of the Bay. This is a song that goes back to your childhood. Is that right?
Well, I think I was 15 or 16 when that record came out. I was devastated by Otis Redding's death, untimely death, only a few weeks after he'd recorded the song. I remember buying it. I was on the Stax label and putting it on and just... there's an incredible sadness about that song. And I suppose the situation of his death would add to that. But what's remarkable about the song is there are no minor chords in it. It's all major chords. There's an E9 in the verse, in the chorus. But apart from that, it's just major chords. That's very clever. How do you do that? So, you know, recording it and actually analyzing it was a very useful exercise for me. I would have never considered recording what I regard as a masterpiece again. Why would you do that? Except I was asked by the Alzheimer's Association if I would choose a song that I would want to remember. The research is that people who suffer from dementia more readily remember songs than anything else. And so it was part of that campaign. Otherwise, I would never have recorded it. So it was just basically as a bonus, saying this is what I've been doing in the year, extracurricular, or just for fun, if you like.
I mean, the magic in music, you know, here we are, you know, you deal in the thing that gives the most lasting impact on a brain. And I think I talk about that a lot in other interviews too. I mean, as far as those senses go, you know, smell's pretty powerful, but there is something about music that not only works in the situation that you're talking about, but I mean, it's a time traveling mechanism for anybody. It's so amazing. Anytime, yeah. That's a song right there. Anytime I hear Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, I can go back to those first moments of hearing that song. It's incredible.
Yeah, wonderful. That's an emotional touchstone for me.
What about the other one then? I'll ask about Nilsson's song there, I Guess the Lord Must Be in New York City. I've never looked it up to see if I was correct. I always assumed that he wrote that one since Everybody's Talking was a cover of him proving that I can also write that song too.
It has the same sort of musical building blocks, the same chords as the one he didn't write from Midnight Cowboy. Again, I was asked to do it by Griffin Dunn. A friend of mine was making a film about the pandemic in New York City, and it was a scene with the health workers looking exhausted. And the song just worked as a piece of soundtrack. And I love the song. There's a lightness to it.
So you'll take all of this to the Las Vegas residency, the My Songs. That's the big thing that's coming up next, right? So, I mean, what can we expect from, is this sort of like a Springsteen on Broadway type of a thing?
Really, it's given me the opportunity to dress my songs in a much more visual manner than I've ever thought about before. State-of-the-art production, amazing projection. So we're creating a world for each song, and it's mainly my old songs. I'm only doing two songs from the new album, which is Rushing Water and If It's Love. The rest of it are my catalog, but in a context that you haven't seen before. And we did a production run last week, and I'm very excited by it.
So when you say you dress these up in a world, are you able to give a kind of an example of one of those?
Yeah, for example, I opened the show with Roxanne as it was written originally with just acoustic guitar in Paris. You know, I wrote that in a seedy hotel behind the Gare Saint-Lazare in 1978. So I recreate that world. And then suddenly we go to, you know, 1989 with Message in a Bottle, you know, big band number. So it's full of little moments like that. It's really the story of my life.
Oh,
without
man.
Me saying very much.
I would love to see that. I mean, hopefully, you know, if, you know, at the end of this, if I don't make it to Vegas, that there ends up
I'll
being
get
some
you
kind
a ticket
of video.
If that's what the hint is.
That's it. That's what I need. I need okay. to know somebody who can get me an in.
I'll give you two.
Thank you. I'll quickly bring up, outside of the music, another world that you've been a part of is the excellent series Only Murders in the Building. It was on Hulu, which I just finished over the weekend. You're a suspect in this, and I don't want to give too much away, obviously, for people who haven't seen it, but this is so fun to see you playing yourself, also the caricature of Sting, I think. I mean, how did you get pulled into this one?
All I'm going to say is I'm going to quote Shaggy's biggest song. It wasn't me, okay? Well, I've worked with those two over the years many times on Saturday Night Live sketches, and they wrote a gag in their script, and they asked if I would do it, and I said absolutely. It sounds like fun. So I was playing it straight. I was playing it like it was a serious drama. They didn't tell me it was a comedy. So.
And it starts with the police joke, the entire thing, don't stand, I mean, you're in the elevator, and it's, of course, like, of all the songs, did you instantly realize that was going to be a pandemic song, talking about Don't Stand So Close to Me?
No, I didn't, but I was happy that the song had a useful meaning beyond the one I thought of originally. So I like songs that are useful, you know, that have a kind of facility beyond just, you know, just being in the charts. They can be used for other purposes. And I was happy with that.
Yeah, that's a 6 foot between us song now. That's what it represents these days. Will you, I have to ask, will you ever be performing the Tim Kono song live, unfinished as it was in the series?
That's a secret. I really can't divulge that. I'm sorry.
I would imagine the same goes for if I ask you, can we expect Sting to return in season two?
You know, I live in a building, so you'd think they would, you know, give me a walk on, a line, I'll carry groceries. Yeah, you know, I live there, so why not?
Last one. Have you seen the new Dune movie?
I haven't seen the new Dune movie, but I've read very good reports of it. I know Fade isn't in it, so they're probably waiting for the sequel to bring me back, you know, old Fade.
I want to see it. I'll pay to see it. I need 2 tickets to that one too, by the way. That's I did watch it last night, and it's a beautiful movie for what it's worth. It's just, it's gorgeous. And
that's good. Then I want to see it even more.
Yeah, no, it's well done. In the meantime, sir, The Bridge is fantastic. Thank you so much for continuing to doing what you do. Sting, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it. It's been a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me, Connor. God bless you.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle, man. Now we'll do part three of my talks with Sting. This one heads back to 2018, and in fact, it's Sting and Shaggy. Yes, that's Shaggy. They did a record together called 44876. That's the country codes of where they're both from as an album title. We got to talk about their collaboration, their love for and history of reggae, and a lot more. So part three of Kyle Meredith with Sting, this one featuring Shaggy.
Hey, Kyle, what's up?
How you doing, guys?
I'm good, man. This is Shaggy. I just woke up. It's a Sting.
I'm always happy to get an artist right as they wake up. It always means really great things.
Yeah, I'm very vulnerable, so be careful with me.
It's really fun to talk to you guys about one of the most fun records of the year with 44876. Congratulations on this one. This is, I mean, as everyone says, it's out of the blue, but it's a whole lot of fun.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a little strange to a lot of people, but really when you get down to the meat of it, you know, it isn't all that strange.
I did notice that we had one new song with Skank Up. Is this from the same sessions or are you guys still knocking these out?
No, that was done late one night in one of our hotel rooms after a lot of gin. And the first thing Shaggy came out with was, oh, Lord, what am I doing here at 2 a.m. making a record?
And then it just ended up being, oh, Lord.
I mean, that sounds like it bodes well for the future. Like, this isn't just going to be a one-off album. You know, are you looking to keep, is this going to keep going? Should we keep expecting these?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. We have a very strong friendship, so If the music doesn't continue, the friendship certainly does.
There you go.
You know, and you know, we kind of take it day by day, ear by ear, played ear by, I should say. Yeah. And whatever comes out of it, you know what I mean? So far, it's been magic, man. And, you know, a lot of people don't get it, but that's kind of what's fun to us because we like seeing their when they do finally get it.
Well, yeah, because diving into the record, I thought, you know, reggae itself has a long-standing message of love. It always seems like that's the heart of it, that's the root of it. And when you're writing songs, like there are songs on this record that reflects what's happening in the news out there. And I thought, you know, what a perfect time to try a record like this, because as artists kind of grapple with how to write these songs, it seemed like this is one of the most perfect paths that could be taken.
I think it's probably a little bit of a happy accident and also a healthy instinct for the right thing to do. So it's a combination of both those things.
Yeah. See, I think with reggae music, what makes it so perfect for these times is, you know, we are in dark political times, as it is. But it is, if you look at the history of reggae music, it's always not just been a music of love and sunshine and fun and good vibes. It's also been a very, it's a revolutionary type of music. You know, you listen to early Peter Tosh, Bob Marley, some of these songs were revolutionary type of music, you know, as well as, you know, it could be love songs. So I think it's the perfect type of music to kind of subtly bring your message to the people, but in a nice way. My mom always says, or my grandmother actually always says, she says, it's not what is said, is how you say it, you know? So
I think that was Fats Domino.
Well, I didn't know Fats Domino, but I knew my grandmother. She probably got it from Fats Domino, okay, bro. Okay.
I'll throw this question to both of you because, you know, you've both tried styles, plenty of styles. Sting, you've obviously tried tons of styles. What's the challenge here of playing towards each other's strengths? Sting, reggae for you and Shaggy, whatever you bring into Sting's world.
I'm still trying to figure out what is it I bring into Sting's world.
it's the book's still open on that one, but... Actually, that's not true. He brings a lot of joy and spontaneity to my life. And the stage show is it's a real reflection of our conversation. You know, and it's very funny and light and sweet. But there's also a steely nerve to it as well.
It's sort
steely
of
nerve. Steely nerve. Steely yeah. nerve. I just made that up. I just woke up.
Okay. All right. Cool. I'm digging.
It does allow both of you guys to take the weight off of being the front man, doesn't it? That's got to be fun.
Oh boy, that's fantastic. I do half the work, and it's you know, it's twice the fun. But it's great to share the load in everything, even in this interview, for example. You know, when I might drop off to sleep, and he'll take over, and vice versa. And the same on stage, we tend to finish each other's sentences. That really does help.
It's good when you're with someone that you're that comfortable with to take a step back. You know, like I'm very comfortable.
When are you going to do that?
I know. I tell you when I do it. But it's good to just kind of let somebody that you trust, you know, take that lead. You know what I mean? And it won't happen any other way unless you have a strong amount of confidence in that person, you know, so it's good. I mean, really, I don't know who that is, but
yeah. We'll let you know.
Appreciate that. That latest single with Get Back My Baby, I can't help it listening to that, Shaggy, without thinking that this was the result of It Wasn't Me.
Really?
Yeah, like this is chapter two of that.
You think they're autobiographical, these songs?
Oh, I don't think they have to be autobiographical, but even in fiction, it feels like it would make the great part two of it. Like I said, and I mean, You know what?
It's great to do songs that are relatable, and a lot of them are not, you know, autobiographical in any way, but it is relatable to people's lives. You know, the thing about It Wasn't Me is either you're banging, you know, somebody banging, you wish you were banging, but it is very relatable, you know, because these things do happen. And the thing with Get Back My Baby is kind of the same. There's so many people that you know is in that position where they sometimes don't mean to take advantage of people or of their situation, but they end up do, and they're sorry. And some people get a chance to redeem themselves, and some people don't. You know, some people really have to fight for that chance, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to actually get that person back. I think that's what this really, you know, the song really speaks to me in that way, where it's like, oh yeah, you're really, really trying. You've recognized how wrong you were, you know, and you know, you're sitting there looking at the four walls, saying, "Damn, what did I do?" You know, and it's very relatable.
Well, I've forgiven you, Shaggy.
You have, yeah.
Guess that answers the autobiographical part right there. Thanks.
Well, it's okay. You can take this baby.
Let me throw that one further down. Have either of you ever thought about revisiting any characters from your songs to do that? Outside of, you know, like conceptual pieces or Broadway or anything, like taking any of your old songs and saying what happens next?
Yeah, that happens all the time. You know, you have certain sort of tropes that you follow, you know, the jilted lover or the sad guy. You know, I mean, yeah, you do that.
Oh yeah, you listen to half the song, everything talk about pain. King of pain, 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 pain. You just love pain.
It's so
funny. Why do you like so much pain?
I used to like pain, but I grew out of it.
Well, I mean, because I've been listening to all these lyrics in these songs. There's a lot of mention of pain. What kind of pain was you in, bro?
Toothache.
Toothache. This live show, do you guys get to reapproach the back catalog songs to rewrite them for this to fit this style at all?
I mean, you know, we're singing each other's songs. I'm singing a song that I was reticent to sing at first. I'm singing It Wasn't Me. but I realized it's actually a moral parable. And so I sing it with a quizzical look on my face, but it's interesting for me to play that role. And then another song, we do Crooked Tree from the album, and Shaggy plays the judge and I play the felon. And it's kind of a lovely lovely little pantomime in the middle of the show. You enjoy that one.
And we're on stage throughout the whole show, man, from the beginning to the end. It's not a segment where it's a Sting segment or a Shaggy segment. We do each other's song. You know, I join him on Every Breath You Take, you know, and a number of songs, Feel Free to Set Him Free, songs like those. And so we trade, you know, Love in the Seventh Ways. We trade songs back and forth and just add little things to them that make them, you know, just make the whole thing intertwined and works very well. And on paper, it might not look like it works, but when you see it, man, it has been a lot of fun, and it's really entertaining.
It's not a stretch, of course, if you know, either of your all's back catalog. I mean, obviously, Sting, you've got plenty of history with reggae, with the Police songs. For you, it doesn't seem like it's as big a dive as people might think it is, right?
No, not really. I mean, the common ground that we share is a love of reggae. You know, Shaggy is an authentic reggae dancehall star, and I just dabble. But I come from a place of respect and also an understanding of it. So, that's the common ground we began.
You know, I think it's not really about the reggae so much. I think what people is about is like, what the hell is he doing with Shaggy? I think that's the part. You know, they look at me as this really
disruptive
bad influence on you. You know what I'm saying?
I think it's the other way around, actually.
Well, I know that, but they don't. You know, it's like last night I ran into this lady who says to me, she was saying, oh, yeah, I was just at the concert. And she had a couple of drinks. And I was like, what do you mean you're at the concert? What concert are you talking about? She said, oh, I was there with the guy that was in the Police and the dirty dancing Jamaican guy.
She didn't recognize it.
Well, you know, she was drunk out of her mind. When I was in the bar. The bar that you didn't come last night, that I went by myself, thank you.
Perfect audience.
Yeah. But I just thought it was funny as hell. And she just says, oh, it was great. And she kept talking about it. I was like, okay. Clearly she wasn't a fan of neither you and I.
No.
She didn't even know you. She was like, the guy that used to be in the Police. I was like, oh, you mean Sting?
It's not a hard word to remember. It's one word. You're two guys with one words, by the way. It looks nice on a poster.
Yeah, ridiculous names.
Ridiculous.
I want to hit back real quick on something about that, because we're talking about those early days, Sting with you and the early parts with the reggae and the Police. You know, a few years later, Paul Simon does Graceland. He kind of gets knocked around for appropriation. Did you all ever was that ever thrown your way as well, or even later at all?
No, I think it's a ridiculous charge. You know, I think, you know, if you're coming from a place of respect, and it's ludicrous too. I mean, music is a common language that we all share, and the genres might come from a particular location, but once they're out in the world, everybody listens to them, you know? I mean,
you know what I think? I think the appropriation argument always comes when you're successful. I was born, raised in Jamaica. I still live in Jamaica, and they charge me for appropriation. How about that?
Is that true?
You know what I mean? It is, you know, the minute I started selling to the mainstream and selling huge numbers and going diamond and all of that, all of a sudden I wasn't reggae. I wasn't, you know, Jamaican enough. I wasn't black enough. I wasn't anything enough. And, you know, it was, you know, appropriation and whatever they call it.
It doesn't usually come from musicians.
You know, so, yeah, it
musicians,
is.
Musicians understand the process.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll kind of introduce something here as a fan, too, that it's like 30th anniversary of Nada Como El Sol. I hope I'm saying that right. And I thought that would be an interesting set of songs to kind of put into this version right here. You know, just a request.
Yeah, well, we do Fragile every night, and Shaggy wrote a new verse for that, which she sings at night. So, yeah, the songs are evolving, as the partnership does.
Well, I love seeing it. I hope it keeps evolving. I mean, what else do we have to get from this?
I mean, we're touring up in December this year, and then we'll see.
We'll see after December what goes on. We do have, as much as you might not believe it, we do have separate careers.
Yeah, but we miss each other when we do that.
It's fine. Every time we go and do our own thing, we're like, I think we should probably just come back.
All right, quick unrelated question before we head out of here. I know we're at the end of the time here. The new Dune movie's coming out. Any chance for a cameo in it? You got any interest in that, Sting?
Nobody's asked me to do that, no. I've still got a costume.
Do you?
No, of course I don't.
This has been a real pleasure, guys. I sincerely appreciate you taking the time here. Congratulations on this record, 44876. We'll look forward to whatever happens next.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, man.
God bless you.
And my thanks to Sting and Shaggy for joining me. And thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can get all the interviews that I send your way every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Jim Croce, Cake, The English Beat, The Jesus and Mary Chain, Belly, Elliott Smith, Deep Purple, Bad Books, Teddy Swims, Patty Griffin, Cage the Elephant, Fleetwood Mac, The Killers, Maggie Rogers, Air, The Dandy Warhawks, Maya Hawk, and my interview with Dave Perner from Soul Asylum. That's what you can hear when you tune in weeknights, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like, follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
When you're good, you're good.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.